Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Great to have you with us. Neil Kulwan coming up in just a few minutes. We'll talk with him about the Steelers and also about the NFL. Last night's game between the Rams and the Chiefs was just fun to watch. They didn't really have a dog in the hunt. Now, the Steelers benefited last night from that game because the Chiefs have now lost twice, and the Chiefs only have a half-game lead over the Steelers in the race for the best record in the AFC. Yes, Sean, have you thought about that?
Did think about that, yes.
Half-game lead now.
Yeah.
The Steelers will play at Denver this week.
Yeah, increase our chances even more to lock in a number two, at least one home game. We'll take that.
Or maybe take it a step further and be the home team for every game. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
again,
depending on how, if Kansas City really takes a tumble, you're right, yeah.
I don't think they're going to.
Yeah, me neither, no.
I mean, that was a spectacular game last night. But the problem with the other two teams that they have in this division, in the conference, in the race for the best record, is it's important to me for the Steelers to get the best record. At least to me it is. For this particular reason, the Steelers fans travel so well. I mean, they overran Jacksonville. Okay, Steeler fans overran Jacksonville. They overrun almost every place they go to. You go to Dallas, there are as many Steeler fans there as Cowboy fans. They buy tickets from people who are willing to sell it, and they go. But there are two places where in the AFC where they have no shot of doing that. Kansas City and Foxborough. The Patriots fans don't give up their tickets. The Chiefs fans don't give up their tickets. So, yeah, you'll have a few Steeler fans at each place, but those are the two places that they go to where really it feels like they are playing a road game instead of walking out in the field looking around saying, look at all our people, man. They're all with us today. See, the Steelers get that because they're a national brand and they have a national following. But two of the places they can't get away with it, where they can't benefit from it, usually are Kansas City and Foxborough.
See, I feel Denver is to an extent as well. Just when you watch all those games at Mile High, those great AFC West rivalries, when I was a kid, you see Charlie Jones on NBC calling them, whether it was, you know, Broncos Raiders or Broncos Chargers. It just seems like there is always a huge sea of orange in the stands. I know it's a challenge for them this year as they're, you know, a couple games under 500, but this won't be an easy one for Pittsburgh on Sunday, so we'll see how Von Miller and the D shows up.
I completely agree with what you just said, but Denver's not in the race for the number one overall seed. And my point about Kansas City and the Patriots was those are the teams they're trying to beat out right now. To me, they're not really trying to beat out Cincinnati or Baltimore. They're trying to now, they're in a position where they played so well. Can they beat out Kansas City and can they beat out New England? And again, my point being is that those are two places where, no matter what happened, I mean, there are playoff games the Steelers have played over the years. You know, they go to Cincinnati. There's many Steeler fans in Cincinnati as there are Bengals fans. All right, speaking of the Rams and the Chiefs, which we just referenced, the play-by-play call of the day, the game winner in the fourth quarter.
First down and 10 from the Kansas City 40. He fires right sideline. Gerald Everett caught him in the shoulder at the 10. Oh! Tiptoes the sideline. Touchdown, L.A. With 1:49 to go, a 40-yard strike from Goff to Everett, and the Rams are back on the high side, 53-51.
Final was 54-51. And what's interesting is you heard the fireworks in the background. I think they were almost out of them. I don't think we have enough. I thought the game was fun. It was just fun. The NFL is an entertainment medium. I mean, it's fun. I mean, I know it's a sport. It's competitive, the whole thing. You got to root for your team, but it's still entertainment. That game was entertaining last night. And with that, we bring in from USA Today, Neil Coulong. Neil, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
It's great to be here. Thank you. I appreciate talking to you. It's about 35 degrees outside, overcast, snowed a little bit. It's nice. It's gorgeous here.
It's 86 here. But
let's be rough.
But if it makes you feel better, I'm in the hotel room doing the show. So,
well, there's that. I kind of assumed that you were trying to go to the Rams Chiefs game and that got canceled there. You just kind of tell your bosses, well, we already paid the tickets, booked the hotel. I'll just do a show down there. How's that?
You know what? Dick Girardi and I were talking about this the other day. We were kidding around, but we said, if we tried to go to the Chiefs-Rams game in Mexico City, we'd probably get about 30 minutes outside. They would take our money and they would leave us off to the side. It's like, who are these two people? Get out of here. We never find our way back. We'd have no shot. All right. The Steelers are not just playing good football. They're starting to border on playing some great football. What it takes a confident team to do what they did on Saturday. Was that the next step for them to show that kind of confidence in that situation on the road?
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways it was kind of, you know, throwing the monkey off their back simply because, one, obviously was a team that that tormented them probably for the better part of 11 quarters in the last 12 that they've played them. And on top of that, they didn't play a good game. I don't think anybody can really say that top to bottom there was a guy in that game that played absolutely outstanding the entire time. They had issues with the run defense. I don't think their plan going up against the Jaguars was exactly in line with what they probably should have expected, considering the result of the last two times they played them. Roethlisberger looked rusty, to put it mildly, for most of that game. But they put it together when they had to, and that is the mark of a good team. And to your point, one that is starting to grow in confidence, starting to really put everything together. And it's a long way from where they were the first probably three drives against Kansas City so long ago. For them to have made that turnaround, it definitely speaks to you know, everyone kind of putting their hand on the pile and you know, trying to make things move. They've come a long way from where they started, and I think that's really sort of the trademark of Mike Tomlin's teams over the last couple of years, you know, probably 5, 6, 7 years. They may not start off the season particularly well, but it's almost like they're playing an extended preseason almost, that they go into the first four games of the regular season. They might not be playing their best, but they're smoking hot come December, and it really looks like that's kind of the path that they're going down now. It's a tough, you know, 6-game stretch they're going to have here to end things, but the ability that they had to win against a very good opponent, records aside, a very good defense for sure, on the road, not playing probably even 70% of their best game through four quarters, I think it speaks a lot for where they're going, what they're trying to do.
Obviously, you know, I think Brown is just a fabulous talent anybody would love to have. We know about Bell's situation. But in reality, the most indispensable player, no matter who it happens to be, is Ben Roethlisberger. Are you seeing a maturity in his game now where he's even taken another step forward in game maturity that even we hadn't seen maybe the last couple of years?
I think, if anything, and that's an interesting point. If anything, what we're seeing is a more open-ended Roethlisberger. I think he is still getting rid of the ball. Pressure is coming down to him. He's still looking down the field. He's not looking to kind of dance around and look to beat guys with his feet. He's looking to release the ball. But more than anything, you know, I haven't looked at the numbers, but it almost seems like he's more, you know, he wants to tuck it and run a little bit more than he has in the past, almost as if, you know, the strict mandate was never run in any situation at all. But right. Jacksonville, to their credit, they covered that shovel pass perfectly. I mean, they knew it was coming. They were right on top of the play. Ben saw it right away and knew that there was nothing there. He, at that point, he's got two choices. well, I guess three if you want to count taking a sack as one of them. He can throw the ball away, or he can tuck it and run. And really, it didn't seem like it took him all that long to you know, kind of figure that out. Knew he had a timeout, and he went out and made a play. And I think we're seeing more and more of those types of plays from Roethlisberger, where really he's just kind of taking the game upon himself to go out and win it if he has to. And that was really kind of the mentality he had over the last couple drives, in which he played, you know, high-level football after really not playing well for the first 7-8 drives that they had. So in that regard, I think he feels, it seems like he has more personal investment within this group. He's making better decisions with the football. Again, didn't play a good game, but you know, he's going up against a very good secondary and a very good pass rush, and the Steelers, by and large, were able to prevail at the end because Ben kind of kept him in it. He kept going with it. He got better as the game went on. The collapse road games that we've seen from the Steelers in the past, he hasn't been able to do that. So I think there is a level of self-confidence that's coming out with him now that maybe we haven't seen as much of over the last couple seasons.
I want to just delve into Jacksonville for just a moment. Bortles down the stretch played well last year. Bortles in the playoffs played well last year, which is a completely different Bortles than what we saw in his previous seasons. They get to the AFC Championship game. It looks like Bortles has reverted back to being Blake Bortles. But again, because they were in the AFC Championship game last year, they couldn't draft in a premium spot or would have even thought about a quarterback. In some ways, did having that great season, which was great for the franchise, great for the community, have a potential to set them back a couple of years because it put them in the undraftable spot, and he gave them hope that maybe he had turned the corner?
That's an excellent point. It's something I thought about during the game as well. I'll add to that. I'll say this. The biggest issue was they gave him enough rope to go out and make plays last season, in which he did. So he gives them some kind of confidence that he's able to do that. But then you have a great first. He played really well in the first half, a great game plan that they had last year, the first half in the AFC Championship game against New England. And then they put the clamps on him in the second half. Did that not look oddly familiar to exactly what Jacksonville did for four quarters against Pittsburgh, but particularly over their last three drives, in which they ran, four if you count the last play of the game, 13 plays for like negative 3 yards with a fumble and a sack? I mean, they're not giving him the chance to go out and make the plays that he's shown that he can do. That's in no way, shape, or form advocating Blake Bortles. The contract that he got is just the going market rate for a starting quarterback.
There wasn't really anything else they were going to do unless
they wanted to say flat out, we're done with him. You know, I don't think they were at that point. They got kind of, you know, forced to stay with him, but they're not helping themselves either. But overall, I think the biggest issue with the game plan they had yesterday was it was as transparent a game plan I think I've ever seen in the NFL. They had no desire to ever throw the ball because they can't protect their passer. I mean, I don't know. You've obviously seen everything there is to see in college football. I would never expect something like this at the NFL level, but have you ever seen a game in which a quarterback dropped back 18 times and got sacked 6? I mean, that's insane. Could you imagine if a team had that rate throughout an entire season? They'd have over, like, I can't do the math on top of my head, but probably like 140 sacks. I mean, it's nuts. That's how bad they were. So it's like you can see where it's coming from. I don't know how much is really on Bortles versus what they have going on in terms of injuries and general pass protection. That's going to kill them more than anything else, and that's as much a reason why they're on a 7-game losing streak as anything else.
No question. I've got to ask you about the Chiefs and Rams game last night, Neil. It's the first time in the history of the NFL that a team has scored 50 or more points and lost. Yet I found my personal observation was that I found the game to be incredibly entertaining because the defense did just enough to make you think like there was one out there scoring 3 touchdowns the way they did last night. How did you look at last night's game, and what do you think it did for the NFL?
I think very much along the same lines of what you're saying. This was a playmaker's game. This was not about offense or defense. This was about stars in the NFL. The only time we will ever see the performance that Chris Jones put on get overshadowed by another player on defense, let alone one at his position. It was incredible what he and Donald did. To read the reaction from so many people talking about how the defense was terrible and this and that, look, you know what? The secondaries weren't very good. Coverage was bad. I didn't think either defensive coordinator did anything to help themselves in terms of the schemes that they had drawn up in terms of coverage. But when you talk about havoc in the front seven, you saw all of that last night. The performances that Goff and Mahomes put up probably trumped up a little bit just simply because even the secondary was, I don't know what either team was really trying to do, but coverage wasn't very good at all. But you saw some just as dynamic play among the front seven of both teams as you did the quarterbacks or the passing game. It was highly entertaining. And I walked away from it just as in awe of Aaron Donald as I've ever been. I think he's
I agree with that completely. Aaron Donald, you know, now Dick Girardi and Jeff Tarman and I watched the game last night, and we all said the same thing. On a night where, like, Mahomes blew me away, it's just fun watching him play. Goff was fun to watch. I thought Aaron Donald was incredible last night.
Yeah, I mean, he may have been the MVP of a 105-point game in which both quarterbacks threw for over 400 yards and several touchdowns. I mean, that's how dominant he was. Here's the biggest takeaway from that game, though. I think to answer your point about what does it do for the NFL, I think this will be the best part of the NFL, because what you really saw out of both of those teams was a major chink in their armor, and that was neither of these quarterbacks hold the ball even up to shoulder level.
No.
They're down at their hip. They fumbled as often as they did because both teams saw early on they can knock the ball loose from either one of these guys if they push the pocket back into them. Every defensive coordinator that is going to have to face either one of those teams, the Rams or the Chiefs, sent out a group text during the game saying, look at where the quarterback is holding onto the ball. This is how you're going to beat either one of these teams. And they still scored 50 points. They turned the ball over left and right.
Right.
They mirrored each other in such a way that the score, in my mind, didn't really reflect what we were seeing on the field, just because they traded punch after punch after punch. It was phenomenal to see, but I think overall there are a lot of people that are going to break down film of that game, and you're going to see both of these offenses get much more of a challenge than they've gotten up to this point in the season.
I think the other part, too, is I saw defenders, what they did last night. They took a page out of the Lawrence Taylor handbook, where you can't see me, but here comes my arm, and I'm gonna go down with all the force I have on the arm that has the ball.
I think that made a big difference.
Yep,
exactly. You look at Donald's second sack. Donald didn't even try to hit Mahomes' body. Didn't even
That's
try.
Right.
He just threw both of his arms out and just basically like put a jacket on him. Like, I'm going to take the ball away. You may or may not go down. I don't care. But the only way to beat you is to get the ball out of your hands. So, you know, and have it not moving down the field at a high rate of velocity. They had to force turnovers, and Donald did that. It just goes to show why he's making the amount of money that he's making. And obviously he stripped them once earlier, but he learned from that. He saw exactly what was going on. Mahomes has the ball at his hip. It's way too low. Neither quarterback was used to being pressured the way that they were in 3 and 5 step drops. Both defenses did a great job of pushing the pocket forward, not wasting any time. They had to basically beat two light-footed quarterbacks to a short spot behind him. That's where he's going to release the ball. That's where they do all of their damage. Both Jones and Donald are in perfect position to prevent that. That's why they were able to make the plays that they were able to make. Both of them kind of had the same mentality. We've got to get the ball out of the quarterback's hand. You know, it's not just about a sack here. We've got to cause turnovers if we're going to win.
Yes, and the NFL is obviously, it's a sport, and it's obviously about winning. But the reason the NFL has an opportunity to succeed is that it's about entertainment. That was an entertainment game last night.
Yeah, I agree 1,000%. It really it did not smack nearly as much of terrible defense as people are making out to be. It was a playmaker's game. Guys just made plays left, right, and center. You know what the real difference was? Obviously, I'm not being literal about this, but three and outs were non-existent. One-yard rushes were non-existent. You didn't see wasted drives or plays. They maximized everything they possibly could out of every single offensive snap that they had. Something bigger than a 1 yard gain happened on pretty much every play in that game. I don't think we've seen anything like that before, and we saw
only one false start all night.
The penalties were all down the field. They were aggressive penalties. Some of them were really kind of questionable calls at best from the all-star crew that apparently we had, but it really left you walking away from it thinking, I had no idea who was going to win this game until the clock expired, and I don't have an off-the-field reason to hate this game, to hate any of the players involved, to hate anything that happened. This was just pure drama-less, off-the-field drama-less football. And it's been a while, I think, since we've really seen that in a primetime stage between two excellent teams. Nobody really screwed up, per se. It was just, guys made plays. Guys forced other guys into mistakes, but you really didn't see sloppiness from either side with the exception of coverage. Kind of made up by the fact that, they're getting cracking off 20, 25-yard gains every time they touch the ball. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Back to the Steelers to close out. They play at Denver. What are your thoughts on this matchup?
Yeah, Denver's a weird place for the Steelers. You never know quite what they're going to look like or how they're going to respond. I haven't looked it up. I think more or less over the last, at least in the Roethlisberger era, they're probably at or around 500 within Denver. But you look at, playing at the Mile High City, you think of the Toussaint fumble in the playoffs. You think of Ben just shredding that team back in the 2005 playoff. You think of a lot of games that really didn't end up the way that you thought they would going into it. There's really just kind of a weird aura about the Steelers in Denver. And their offensive line, despite some injuries, has played a lot better in recent weeks. It's going to be a difficult shot for the Steelers. I don't necessarily love their chances here, even as kind of mediocre as Denver has been. They can still rush the quarterback. It's really going to be on their offensive line to protect Roethlisberger and kind of control the momentum of the game. You really don't want to give opportunities to a team that doesn't have a whole lot to play for except for their jobs and a team that wants to run the ball. You don't want to get behind the sticks against a team like that, exactly like what happened in Jacksonville. I mean, how many times are you going to come back 16-0 down in the fourth quarter? It's difficult to do. So it's a tough opponent. This kicks off a really nasty streak of six games for them too. Ben's never won in Oakland. They've only won once in Ben's career. He was hurt the time that they won. And that was, 38-35. They needed 200 yards and a miracle play with like a minute left from Antonio Brown to win that game. So whatever reason, they've played bad Raiders teams plenty of times. They've played bad Broncos teams. They're always competitive against the AFC West. They're always tough games. With the Chargers on deck, probably the second best team in the AFC West and certainly a playoff team. This is going to count for a lot, and you got to worry about fatigue, you got to worry about injuries, and Denver's a tough place to play. So I don't know. I would like their chances going into it, but like I said, just weird things happen in Denver. We'll see how they shape up and how they're going to prepare for it, but it's going to be a tough game.
Neil, it's always a pleasure. I appreciate it, and happy Thanksgiving to you and yours, and that way I want to make sure you understand how grateful we are for everything you do for the show. It means a lot.
Pleasure is all on my end. Go out and enjoy the weather now. Come back for the cold and snow, and enjoy Thanksgiving yourself. I appreciate it, guys.
Neil Kulong, USA Today. One final half hour coming up. Don't forget Penn State basketball tonight with an 8:30 tip-off tonight and 8 o'clock airtime here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
SMC is where you want to be for your next new F-150 and everything starting with E. Make 2018 a November to remember with savings up to $13,000 on your next new Ford F-150. Sunbury Motors has F-150s starting at $25,669. All SUVs starting with the letter E will plummet in price for SMC's November to remember. 67 Ford Escapes, 23 EcoSports, 22 Explorers, all at one location. Brand new Ford Escapes starting at an unheard of $17,820. If you haven't looked into the all-new Ford EcoSport, now is the time. 2019 Ford EcoSports start at $19,880. SMC has the SUV that started it all, the Ford Explorer, for under $32,000. Hurry in now to SMC so you can show off your brand new Ford at Thanksgiving dinner or to your buddies at Deer Camp. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Yeah, we get to this time of the year, we're 2 days before Thanksgiving. But you start thinking about all the, you know, so many things that you're thankful for, obviously. And I've talked about this before, how fortunate am I get to do what I do, for goodness sakes. And, you know, working with people like Dick Girardi, Jeff Tarman, Jack Ham, Roger Corey, Bob Taylor, Ron Moeller, Derek Williams. I mean, incredibly fortunate. But then, of course, there's Sean, who is unbelievable. I mean, special beyond special. I mean, really is. But also, I want to our sponsors. I mean, what's interesting is that they aren't just sponsors on this show. They become really good friends. Just Tom Merz, unbelievable guy. Corey, how Corey treated my brother when he came into town. He treated him like he was like something else. I mean, beyond words. Adam Purdy. The entire Purdy group, Steve Engel, everybody over there, this all, really, you feel really fortunate that you're able to be with and work around people who are just really good people. Really good people. So I want to make sure I mentioned that before we kept going here. Yes, the Steelers are at Denver. I can hear the fear in your voice already.
Well, I get six in a row, going for seven, and it's another team below 500, and it was the same kind of vibe I felt going into the Jacksonville game. Okay, they're going to stub their toe somewhere down the road, but you kind of wonder if it's going to be here or if they're really going to get into the intense portion of the schedule next month when they have to take on the Chargers and then the Patriots and then the Saints right before Christmas.
It's just this fear.
No.
I hear fear.
But I will say this, though. I mean, it will be cool if the Steelers can continue to win out and the Saints continue to run out. How phenomenal will that game be right before Christmas? Down in the Dome.
Yeah, what day's that game?
That is the Sunday. That'll be the 23rd. That'll be the Sunday before Christmas. So Steelers at the Saints.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I love that. Then I'll be watching that. I'm not going anywhere on the 23rd. I feel good now. This is good. Good. That's a great game.
Yeah.
I love it. All right. That's the 23rd, huh?
Yes.
That's going to be you know what's phenomenal? The Saints are not just playing really good offensive football. What'd you expect? I mean, any team that's Drew Brees, a quarterback, is going to play phenomenal offensive football. But they're playing great defensive football. I mean, terrific.
Yeah, that line's legit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you. They're playing really, really well. So I give him a lot of credit, my man.
Yeah, Michael Thomas, though, he's turning into an instant flat-out star for the Saints. I think this is the flashiest wide receiver they've had for the Saints since Colston a little over a decade ago.
I would think so.
Yeah, I think
he's been really good.
Yeah, I think Colston was like a seventh round.
I thought he was really
good
at Ohio State. No, go ahead.
No, Marcus Colston, I believe he was a seventh-round pick when he was taken, 05, 06, something like that? For the Saints.
Fordham? Yeah, was he out of Fordham? Where is Colston out of? That's a good question.
Yeah.
Look that one up and see. I thought he was from, if not Fordham, then some other small school, I thought, up in there. We're like, oh, wow. Like one of those, like, where'd they get him from? He's looking it up. I can tell.
My little internet machine's running a little slow today.
Just do what I do. Hit the thing on the side.
Yes. Okay.
That ought to do it. Yeah, perfect. It's just the noise management wanted
to hear. As long as you and I stay connected. Well, I'm using a different
just the noise management one.
Well, I'm using a different computer for you and I to stay connected. So.
Oh, goody. Goody, goody, gumbo. But I thought Colson was from a small school. Like, I was like, you know, not like, you know, like what Chris Hogan did when he left Penn State and went to Monmouth. But I didn't think Colson was from a big place.
I went to Hofstra.
Yeah, okay. All right. So I got the right area. Yeah, he went to Hofstra. Okay. Mucho cool. Good for him.
Yeah, seventh round pick, 2006.
Mm. Wow. Okay. Well, we talked a lot about Penn State football earlier. Not a little, a lot. I really did a breakdown of the younger players on the team and what they mean to the future. And I did that earlier by talking about the seniors as well. I did watch the Maryland video this morning. I just watched the offense. I'll watch the defense later. I'll watch them tomorrow. They do a lot of look at the hand, look at the hand. A lot of motion. They'll jump linemen and put them into an unbalanced line. They will put McFarland. You got to watch where McFarland is all the time. Because McFarland, they'll bring in Fleet Davis or they'll bring in Leak to be the tailback. But that doesn't mean that McFarland's out of the game. That means that he could be on the wing. And they love running jet sweeps with him off the wing. And he has, you know, he has fabulous instincts, not just the speed, but he knows how to be a running back. He's really good. He has really good running back instincts, I think. He's not just a speed guy playing out there. And that is the, Pigram throws the deep ball actually pretty well. What he doesn't do well is he's not really accurate throwing the shorter medium pass. For whatever reason, he's not. But when it comes to deep ball, he actually can lay the deep ball in there. He's not that bad. So you have to be aware of that, the fact that he can and does do that. But that's what I saw. Their offensive line is obviously very good run blocking line, and Farland reads his blocks well, but they are not a very good pass blocking line. It goes back to what I've talked about. I know it's a broken record with me sometimes, and it hasn't panned out in every game this particular season. But if you can play with the lead on these guys, and oh, what the heck is this? If you lead on these guys, it makes all the difference in the world. Because if you can put them behind and force them to where they have to throw the ball and think about possibly abandoning their running game, then it does become an issue for them. It really does. Great. My ESPN thing now is all in Spanish. That's really great. That helps a lot.
did the website already automatically like convert over to Spanish without?
Well, it just did it on its own now. I'm like, what the? No offense, I know some words. It's got to be an area where, like language. It's being pot center. That's much. Everything else. I'm a mess. May have to download over again, start over. But all of a sudden, they just started coming in. You know what the problem is? An ad came up, and I just X'd out. It was for something here in Mexico. And you know what that happens to be? You know what I'm talking about?
Dos Equis?
Digital media.
Just when you thought you left it.
Yes. No. Digital. It's just, I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, how many of you out there like feel like you're haunted by it? All right. Oh, for goodness sakes. I don't want that. Man, I want. It's coming up as ESPN.com.m. I don't want that. Killing me. I decided to wake up today and kill me. All right. Oh, good. I go to UMass, part ways with Mark Whipple. You know, his son was a backup quarterback at Penn State. There are rumors now, and they think they have sources to confirm it, that Clay Helton is going to return to USC, that Lynn is not going to get rid of him, Lynn Swann. Interesting. So if that happens, wow, here's a big one. Ex-Michigan State President Luana Simon faces 4 charges for lying to police in a NASA investigation. Investigators believe former Michigan State President K. Simon why to law enforcement. The school handled former Hillary. Simon was with 2 felony counts and 2 misdemeanor counts of lying to the Michigan State Police, crimes that could land her in prison for a maximum of 4 years if she is convicted. She served as the university president for 13 years before resigning under pressure the day Nassar was sentenced to up to 175 years in prison for sexually abusing his patients, many of them on the Michigan State campus. Shortly after Simon's resignation, the state attorney general appointed a special investigator to look into what officials at Michigan State knew about Nassar's crimes. The warrant for Simon's arrest says she knowingly made false statements to the state police when asked whether she was aware of any investigation involving Nassar before 2016. The school's Title IX office and the university police department both investigated a sexual assault complaint made about Nassar in 2014 and did clear him of wrongdoing. Simon allegedly told police that she was aware of in 2014 that there was a sports medicine doctor who was the subject to review. In fact, she knew it was Nat Larry who was subject, according to the warrant. So, third Michigan State official charged with crimes as a result of the investigation, former gymnastics coach Kath Cleggs, was police. William Strample, Nashville's former boss as dean of the medical school, was charged in March with neglect of duty along with other crimes that weren't related to Nassar's conduct. Both Cleggs and Strample resigned their positions at Michigan State prior to being charged with those crimes. Several survivors of Nassar's abuse criticized Simon for what they say was a defensive and callous reaction as the details of what happened on the Michigan State campus came to light throughout 2016 and 17. In her resignation this past January, Simon blamed her forced departure on the tragedy being politicized. Simon remained an emeritus faculty member after her resignation. Michigan State officials did not immediately respond to questions about her current employment status Tuesday. A representative for the Michigan Attorney General's office said Simon is scheduled to be arraigned on Monday. The representative said the Attorney General's office had no further comment on the charges against Simon or the status of the investigation. Lindsay Lemke, a former Michigan State gymnastics captain and a survivor of Nassar's abuse, said the charges against Simon are another stepping stone toward holding accountable all the people who enabled Nassar. She said, quote, Luana Simon's arrest comes as no surprise to me. It has been very clear that she has always tried to hide from the situation and only protect herself, and now we know why. Wow. That's a big one right there. That is a big one. That's really, that's not a small story at all. All right, we'll take a final break. Back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, we come here. Great to have you with us on the show today. Tonight, the Nittany Lion basketball team will play Wright State here in the Cancun Challenge. Wright State, of course, out of the Horizon. 4 starters back from a team that knows how to get to the NCAAs. And, look, That'll be tonight at 8:30. We're on beginning at 8 o'clock. As I mentioned earlier, if Penn State had everybody available tonight, I think they would be the favorite to win this tournament down here. They don't. Mike Watkins is here, but he's not going to be available to play tonight. And so, you know, against a good team with a good point guard in Cole Gentry, Billy Wampler up front, really good player. Loudon Love, a good rebounder, can block a couple of shots. They do have a good-looking team, no question. But so does Penn State. I do not expect Rasir Bolden to go 0 for 10 tonight or 0 for 6. And if he hits one shot, including the layup at the end, he hits one shot against DePaul, guess what? Penn State wins the game. Doesn't go to overtime. So, I mean, he had an 0 for 10 night, 0 for 6 and 3s. He's a much better player than that. We all know that. He's got quicks. He's got a really good shot. So, interesting. Okay. Tomorrow we're going to have a beat writer on from Maryland, from the Washington Post. And she'll join us to talk about Penn State. And they give us what Maryland has been through this year, how everybody's handled it from Matt Canada to the players. I think it'll be a fun, fascinating interview with her, and I think it'll be very informative. So I'm looking forward to that tomorrow. So that will be tomorrow's show. And we're looking forward to that very, very much. So what, the first day of hunting season is Monday, isn't it?
That's correct, yeah. And first day of bear was yesterday here across the state.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I can see Elmer's suit going out right now.
He's very, very quiet.
Yeah, little, yeah.
I think he told me we must hit a lull in one of the meetings not too long ago. I don't think he re-upped his license this year. So there you go. So you're in the clear to head back to the States following the tournament.
Are you saying the state didn't renew it?
One or the other. That's true. I should have looked.
I want some clarity here. Yeah, yeah. Who said no? It was like what Jeff Tarman was accustomed, right? And he got hung up for 45 minutes. And he got on the bus, and I said, fine. I said, you know what? I said, it didn't turn out the way we hoped it would. I said, they let him go anyway. We'll talk to you tomorrow. We'll talk to you tonight at 8 o'clock.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.